Major Hum, Reel 36. I think you were saying it was in mid-August 1943 that you were moved again from that area south of Tripoli.
Yes, and we weren't sorry to leave, because by then, you know, so little to do and uninteresting. And we then were on the move again to Sfax.
Wasn't that in the opposite direction?
It was going up again. Towards Algiers.
Yeah, so you'd been from Tunis to Tripoli, and then you were going back westwards again up towards Sfax.
Towards Tunis again.
Yes.
And Sfax was a little port, French and Arab population. Everyone very friendly. And we were sort of on the edge of the town, which made it sort of that much better. And on the way, of course, we passed through lots of the places that we fought over, from Tripoli up through Gabies and or Bengala and Gabies and up that way, and till the squadron was based. Slightly north of the town, on the sea, and there was a tented camp, and the sea was great because you could walk out. Well, it was great in a way. You could walk out for nearly half a mile, you know, just up to your knees or waist, and the swimming, of course, as you got out, was even better. Great swimming.
How did you move to get to Sfax? Was it by truck? So you still hadn't got your cars back?
No. And Sfax was lots of fish available there, and the fishermen used to go out and bring in stuff. And the other thing they used to get there was sponges. There was a great area for sponges, apparently. We were allowed into the town, and the people, the French and the Arabs, were very, very friendly. And you could mix. There were lots of people. This town was quite new to us, to be able to mix with people and talk to them and go in and have a fish meal, which was good. They had a hall there, a sort of like a village hall or a town hall, where they used to meet up. You could go in there and talk to people. I got friendly with one family who were Jewish, French, and he was a merchant, and he took me into one of his warehouses, and it was piled high with date stones. And apparently the Germans used to have these and use them for a process of making a ersatz sort of coffee.
Date stones?
Date stones. That's what he told me that they use them for. But how the process went, I don't know. But they said they... And this warehouse was absolutely piled high with a heap of these date stones. How they collect them or what they did, unless they had a factory somewhere where they... Sort of packed them, but took the stones out prior. Right. So, quite an interesting thing. And we were again in tents in this area. We were about 3 or 4 miles out of Sfax. So, if you want to go in, you walked in. And the other thing too, they had there was a big barracks of. A cavalry barracks with spahis, only the French cavalry, and beautiful horses. The Arabs, and they were really great. And of course, they invited anyone who wanted from the regiment to go and ride. Sort of 7 o'clock in the morning, you could go down there and get a ride. And I went out one morning on one, and then, I don't know what it was, but beautiful horse. Well, they're more about the size of a pony. They weren't the big horses. They were Arabs. And took off out into the desert, went back the wind.
So you were carried off, were you?
I was carried off. And fortunately, I think I'd seen other horses out there and had gone. And it slowed down once it got to these others. But I thought I was going there and never to be seen again. But they were very good, very friendly. And they made of the stay there very pleasant, civilised. So,
were they part of the French army, those spies?
Yes. Mm. I don't know what the history or how they got there or where they'd come from before the Germans had occupied it or not. I don't know at all. But they were certainly there when we were there. Of course, they might have come down from Algiers. Because the French were in Algiers then, weren't they?
They were.
So they could have been shipped down or moved down after the hostilities. But by now, the battle for Sicily was well underway at this stage. So I think while we were there, we were given different tasks. Like I think there was a lot of transporting of vehicles to be done. Each squadron was given a task. One squadron was responsible for the guarding and safety of the dock area. Another one was there sort of helping, I think, with they used to call them vehicle supply, anyway. I think you'd send off a party to do a particular job of transporting vehicles from A to B. Because at that stage, with Sicily having been invaded, they obviously needed certain vehicles to go to certain points, and I think that's the jobs of various troops were allocated. So it was all various administrative jobs, really, we were employed at. Stage.
What was your squadron doing most of the time?
We were doing the vehicle transport. I think A squadron, I think, were probably doing the guarding of the security of the docks.
Was it a big harbour?
Not terribly big. I suppose you'd get a three or four bigger ships in. I mean, it was not as big as Benghazi, but equally, if they get three or four ships in at a time, it's quite a help.
It's considerable.
Yes. Mm. So, and they were the sort of tasks we were allocated at that time. All pretty boring, I think. But
they were keeping you busy.
Yes.
What could the troops do when they're off duty? What did SFAX have to offer?
Well, not a lot. You could go there and I think they could get sit in a bar and have a wine. I'm not sure if they had beer. I dare say they did. But it was just a sitting outside at the bar and seeing people go by and that sort of thing. It was a nice, quiet little town, pleasant place. There was no such things as dances or anything, or cinemas or anything like that. But it made a change where you could mix with the civilization, really. So,
more there than there had been south of Tripoli.
Anywhere else. Here then too, we started to take Mepicum. We'd never had anything before, and it was taken quite seriously, really. The whole squadron had to line up at a certain time every day, and one had to ensure that every man took it. It wasn't a case of trying to get out of it. There was no chance. Everyone had to take it, which seemed rather strange to most of the men, because we'd been on the desert for at least 2 years, and I don't think we'd had any problems with
malaria
or anything. But then everyone's complexion started to take on a yellowish colour, and it looked quite strange. But anyway, it's the sort of thing we carried on doing. There were biggish tablets that you had to swallow. I think we used, round about lunchtime every day, we'd be lined up and given to them. And any of that, what people that were away, they had to take them when they returned.
Who actually did this? Was it the medical officer? Or was it done by...
An officer would be there, and it'd be a matter of going along with the line of troops and just giving them a tablet each and make sure they took it. And not a case of holding their nose and forcing it down the throat. And as I say, things were pretty quiet there. And by now, Sicily had been captured. And so the next attack would be on the mainland. And so once again, we got instructions to move, this time to Algiers.
So you were going west again?
Yeah, west and north.
Northwest, yes. Yeah.
And I'm not sure what date we actually moved there. I'll probably come along with it later on, think of it. But this time we were going to move in cattle trucks.
Cattle trucks?
Mm. I think they used to hold, 8 horses and 40 men, or 8 horses or 40 men, I think, was the thing that's normally written on the side of the French
yes.
And so we were all put into cattle flats, and we started off for Algiers. And that took us 3 days and nights. So it wasn't a fast journey, it wasn't a comfortable one.
Did you have anything to make bedding with on the cattle trucks?
Well,
no
had
straw.
Was your ordinary bedroll that one always carried with, a couple of blankets or whatever one had got used to using. And they were just laid on the floor of the cattle truck by yourself when you want, or rolled up during the day and sat on. And of course, we kept the side of the doors open of the cattle truck. And whenever there was a halt, you would see men running along to the engine with a brew can.
For hot water?
For hot water. And you'd turn a thing on the steam, and that would be... And that used to happen at most stops. I mean, the soldiers used to love their tea. And there was a good supply of tea, I think. And that would be one of the things to do.
How did they feed you? Did you take your rations with you as individuals?
I think it was done centrally. From what I think you would. By then, everything was done centrally. There was no facilities of cooking yourselves as troops as we did on the armed cars. So there was a central cookhouse. So I think rather what they would do would have these big Dixie things that the cooks would stick in a lot of tins and stuff and stir it up, and you would have that at certain times, at certain halts we had. But as I say, we were 3 days and 3 nights on this train. I don't know what the distance is from Sfax to Algiers. Oh, and also too at Sfax is where Paddy Doran was buried.
Was there a military cemetery there
yes.
for him?
Mm. So he was there. It's quite an experience, I think, to travel up that distance in a railway track. It wasn't the first time we'd done it, because I think our first trip in France was on cattle tracks. Anyway, eventually we reached Algiers, or the area, and we were some miles from the city. And we were put in a big warehouse. I think probably a grain warehouse, where the beef warden were housed. And we got in there, it's the first time that we'd slept under a roof, apart from when we went to Cairo for leave. First time we'd slept under a roof since we landed in North Africa. So it was quite a thing to look up and see a ceiling as opposed to stars. But I don't think that did as much good, because people started to develop colds and coughs and that sort of normal thing. Whereas I think when we were out in the fresh air, we it was much healthier, I think.
Was it more comfortable being in under a roof?
I suppose it was, really, although we'd got so used to living under the stars, I think. But, I suppose it was comfortable, because when it rained you were in the warm and
dry.
You could have the chance then of sort of getting a few knickknacks, like a little table with a book at the side of your bed, and you'd make yourself, get yourself a bed. It probably was better in the long run.
How was your squadron arranged then within the grain warehouse? Were you just laid out bedding rolls on the ground or on the floor of the building?
Each troop were allocated an area. Plenty of space. Some people had made themselves or acquired themselves little wooden beds, and like the camping bed type things, and obviously picked up somewhere or other. And there was a main cookhouse, so all one had was a sleeping area, which they had to worry about. I had a little room to myself on the other side of the road to the warehouse. Probably might have been a little office, but I was quite comfortable there with a box of oranges, which was in my room every day, which we could pick beautiful big oranges. So I used to eat dozens of oranges there. And it was, as I say, apart from that, one could have a chair, some books or whatever, and it was comfortable.
Home comforts.
Home comforts. And as I say, fruit, plenty of fruit. We had a parade ground just in front of the ground, where we'd have early morning parade, roll call or something. And the officers used to come on parade at that time, just doing my, check up on the troops and whatnot. And we were about near Bleda, which was, I think there was a military town. There was a big airfield there as well. And I think that was a barracks there for the Foreign Legion. So it was a fairly busy town. And we used to arrange transport to take so many people in every evening. And there was a cinema there which showed, at that stage, films, English-speaking films, some of them French-speaking films. There were lots of bars for wine and a chance to meet up with the local people. So getting quite civilized, really. And of course there were lots of other forces there, RAF, and there was also French Air Force was there, American. So it's a pretty busy place.
How did you get on with the local population?
We found it very friendly. You know, sort of various people sort of formed association with them. You know, sort of were invited into their house for a meal, which was rather nice. But on the whole, there was no trouble with them at all. They were very friendly. Made a nice change. But it was a big Air Force contingent, really. I know at Christmas time, that was Christmas dinner we had there, and B Squadron put on a pantomime. It was called Little Miss Muffet, and the chaps were very good. I mean, the costumes they got, you know, were very, very good. They made themselves and made themselves up, and I think the Little Miss Muffet sort of looked a proper doll, you know.
Who was playing Little Miss Muffet?
A chap called Trooper Uren, U-R-E-N. And he played, and I think he did it very well indeed. And that was quite a good evening. Of course, we invited other squadrons to come as well to see it. And sort of made it quite a good sort of evening. I think they did about two or three shows over a period of 2 days, perhaps. But they were very good.
What were you doing day to day while you were now?
There was a certain amount of training. There was cross-country runs organised. We had a new issue of hand grenades, the phosphorus grenades, which we had and took out and practiced using. So you had to be very careful with those. And then gradually we were getting armed cars coming in.
You're being reissued with?
Yeah. Mm. We had the Daimlers, and also we started getting for the squadron headquarters the Staghound armored car, which was the American sort of heavy.
Tell me about the Staghound.
It had a 37 millimeter gun on it. It was higher, much heavier, thicker turret, and it had two engines, actually. So if one sort of went off the road, you could switch over and use the other engine. They were much heavier and bigger than the Daimler.
Did they have thicker armour as well?
I think slightly thicker armour. But I don't think they were so maneuverable as the Daimler. I think the Daimler was a better car for the Sabre troops to have than the Staghound. It was much heavier, and I think off-road would sink easier than the Daimler.
Was it just a four-wheel?
Yeah, it's a four-wheel car, yes.
With a crew of three?
Yeah, I still had three. That's right. I was thinking I had four, but I think we still only had three. But we only had two of them per squadron.
What was it like to drive?
Well, they're comfortable to drive. You're up higher. But they're power steering, of course. And they were good to drive. But I think on the whole, the troops would prefer the Daimler. But although they never had the chance, the troops had kept the Daimler. But I think they would have preferred the Daimler to the Stagehound. Because it was higher, it wasn't such a low silhouette as the Daimler.
More difficult to hide it.
It is.
What was its intended use then, if it was issued at squadron headquarters?
I don't know really. Whether it had a little bit more room in it for the headquarter people to work in, like the old, had it got a command vehicle. But I say there were probably not sufficient of them to issue to the whole regiment. So they had enough, I think, just to do two per squadron. And around about this time too, the regiment was gradually offered to spend 10 days leave at a leave camp that they'd set up on the coast, like probably a glorified holiday camp, I suppose.
A Butlins.
A Butlins sort of thing, but only for males, because there are no women out there anyway. And so everyone in the regiment was offered a 10-day break if they wanted it. And I didn't particularly want to go. It didn't appeal to me, a holiday camp laying on the beach or things like that. It never has. So I asked the colonel, or asked the squadron leader, and he asked the colonel, if I could go to Tunis. Because I hadn't seen Tunis. And it's interesting, Kowloon and those places around there would be interesting. And I thought, well, I'd like to go, but I hadn't had the opportunity. So I said, could I go to Tunis? And so the colonel said, yes, provided you get there and get back under your own steam. But it was quite a long way, Algiers to Tunis. I said, all right, I'll see what I can do. So off I went. I first of all went to the French. No, I went to the English first. RAF. Which is not far from where we were, you know, got the jeep and went off. And they weren't very helpful at all. I said, well, have you got a flight going to Tunis and that, could I get a lift? We're not a tourist thing or anything, we don't give people rides here, there and everywhere. And they weren't very nice at all. Okay, thank you. And so I went to the French. And they were charming. They said, we'd love to, but we don't have anything going there, and we haven't the facilities and all that. But they were nice about it. They weren't sort of pompous. So I said, thank you very much. So then I went to the American base, you see. And they said, sure. There's a DC-3, is that the Dakota? Over there, get on that, and that'll take you to Maison Blanche, which is the Algerian airfield. So I said, okay. So I got on it. No, I didn't, that wasn't then. They said, sure, we can. What time can you get here tomorrow morning? That's right, because I had my jeep. What time you get here tomorrow morning, or whenever? So I said, 9 o'clock or whatever. Is that all right? Yeah, sure. So Anyway, I sort of asked the colonel, I told him the plan.